Hello and welcome to the season finale of Audio Capsule, an album-by-album deep dive hosted by me, Mike Gibson, and my buddy, Mark Turley. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going good. It's a little bittersweet about this being the last episode, I gotta say.
I mean, we can still, like, hang out and talk. We can...
Oh, no, it's not bittersweet that I'll miss you, because I won't miss you, because I'll see you and talk to you still.
I just won't miss you. That's fine.
Yeah, no. It's just I like doing this podcast, but at the same time, it also is like, oh, now my Wednesday nights are going to be free.
Hey.
So that's also a good thing.
I'm sure I'll come up with some other project to fill the Wednesday nights and be like, oh, well.
Oh, no, yeah, Against the Giants is going to start making a record. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. That's course. Oh, yeah, that's on the to-do list, too.
Yeah. But anyway... I'm also very excited for this episode because it is about the new Bridge Under Fire record, which is called Back to Square None.
It sure
which
is.
Which just came out a week ago.
Yeah.
Or as of this recording, it's been out for a week.
Yeah.
I guess when this comes out, it will have been out for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. Yeah. It's was one of the plans to try to get it out in time to finish this season of Audio Capsule so we could talk about it.
Right, which is a crazy goal to design the release of an album around this podcast.
I don't know if you've listened to some of the other things we've talked about this season, but
no,
like,
I know.
The crazy goals are my thing.
It's very in line with your way of thinking, but to, I don't know, like, how many people really listen to this podcast? It's not like we're like, you know, no one's sponsoring us or anything. To do it for the fans, of this podcast, I'm sure they appreciate it very very much.
It's Adam Karki. He's the one
it's
fan.
It's Adam,
really
it's Chris, it's Haley. those three for sure. And I haven't
checked the numbers.
Name. Yeah.
I'm like, that could easily bum me out. Or I could be like, who are these people?
Right.
So I just don't check.
Well, we should check. We should see how we're doing.
I'll add it to
we
the
should check once a season. At least once a season we should check and see.
All right. I'll add it to the to-do list.
Well, I'm going to let you give some background, but I will point out that this album has been released less than 2 years after the previous Bridge Under Fire album, which in my world is just complete insanity, unless we're talking February records. But to put out two albums with a full band in less than 2 years is a pipe dream.
And it's historic because it's the first time we've had the same lineup for two albums in a row, which is insane.
Very insane. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. I mean, the world might explode right now just because of this.
I know, yeah. So what was like the genesis of this record and why did it happen so quickly after The Compromised Land?
So Compromised Land came out in December of 2020. Because that was, as you listened to a few episodes back, I wrote it, a lot of it, and then we just kind of threw it all together, got the band involved at the end, and we're like, we have nothing else to do. Let's go record it. And we were working towards going to Brett's and recording and all that. And when it came out, we did like their little release show, but we still couldn't play any shows yet. So all through like 2021, like I did a February album again. And then we were practicing, but they weren't doing any like shows. It was just the four of us are part of our little bubble here, you know, and doing our thing. And it was like, well, I guess I don't know. What should we do next? And what can we do? And Chris chimed in and was like, so I know how, like, during isolation, you wrote that whole last album. I wrote a bunch of stuff, too. And I was like, oh, good. Because, like, creatively, like, I'm running on fumes right now.
Yeah.
So he was like, well, I have this riff. It's one of the songs. I have this entire structure all written out for this one. And so for a while, like, he was bringing in, like, a lot of riffs. And, like, this is a very Chris-heavy record.
Yeah.
Playing wise and just like songwriting arrangement wise, like I wrote the lyrics, but as far as like this is the vibe and the feel of this song, there's a lot of Chris on there.
Sure.
And I think we maybe played like two shows in 2021.
Yeah.
And then going into the winter, we were just kind of finishing. Then we were kind of like, I don't know, let's just put out another one, I guess. I mean, we're here. Let's schedule time and do it. And I had said in, I don't know, two episodes ago or whatever, when I was planning my February album where I did the 28 songs in 28 days, a crazy thing, I had it all set of like when certain pedals had to get released, when Bridge Runner Fire had to record, when the February album had to come out, so then we could start this podcast and everything would work.
Yeah.
Somebody in the band got COVID, and it delayed it to February. So I was recording this while I was recording that February album. It was like canceled off like 2-3 days to go to Brett's and record this album.
Right.
So yeah, it was a lot.
So an acoustic February album came in handy.
Well, I mean, it ended up being full band anyways, but I was like, I did have that to fall back on if I needed it. But.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, you recorded it at Hoban Studios with Brett Hoban. Same lineup, same producer.
Brett even played tambourine again. Hit that one note and he crushed it.
Crushed it, Brett. There's also, we're going to talk about the two bonus tracks for this record, but we can talk about, that's a different recording process. You want to touch on that when we get there?
Yeah, we'll get there when we get there.
Okay, cool. So what's the, anything else about the general recording process, writing process? It's just Chris brought in a bunch of tunes.
It was a lot of Chris stuff. I mean, I did write some stuff, you know, and brought in some riffs
too. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you. I feel like I remember you telling me that a lot of these songs were, came from Chris. But then listening to the record, I expected him to be singing more on it, but he's only on like one. He's featured prominently on one track, but then that's maybe backups on other stuff, but it's other. That's not the case.
Well, that's, so I mean, that's like he writes his own kind of, I mean, not kind of, they are his own acoustic songs and his like side projecty stuff.
Yeah.
But he doesn't play out a lot with it or doesn't, you know, he just writes all that kind of stuff. But for this, we're like, I don't know, I've just always written lyrics for it. And there are times where I'm like, hey, can you throw something in there? But what he brings to us is like, okay, so I have this, these are the chords, and I have this really cool guitar part that I want to play. And that, but then he'll bring in more of like, it's verse, chorus, but then it's verse with the stop here. And this is the, like, it's all there. And there are times where it's like, that's a really cool, like, instrumental part. And I'm like, how do I sing over that? And he's like, oh, that's your problem. I didn't even think about that. Like, you, I did my job. That's all you, buddy. Go run with that.
That makes sense. Cool, cool.
So yeah, that's kind of, I mean, that's just kind of the vibe of how we've sort of always done it, you know?
Okay.
But the,
Sorry, did you have something else to
say? I was just saying that's how it goes. When I say like I credit like, oh, this is a Chris tune being like, he brought in the initial riff that like, was the spark to start everything.
Right. Yeah, yeah. All right. Talk to me about the title, Back to Square None.
So, kind of the theme on a lot of these as it kind of goes through, it wasn't written to be like a straight concept record like some of the other stuff we've talked about, but the overall theme was, where do we go from here? Like, as a band, we've done a bunch of albums. We did the concept record. We did some vinyl stuff. We did splits. We did EPs. We did singles. We did whatever else. We've played, done our tours. We've done stuff. It's like, I don't even know what to do next. And then coming out of the pandemic, it's like, I don't even know what we can do, where to go. Half the band has kids. And it's like, what is that limit us to do as a band, you know? And I was like, I don't know, we just kind of like sort of just go back to basics, just let's just work on just writing some songs and just starting over and doing that. And that was kind of the idea. And we had a couple different, you know, ideas. Everyone's pitching out different titles, and I was like, I don't know, I think I had said something about like, you know, we're just going back to the beginning, and Tim threw out more like Back to Square None, and we were like, perfect. I like it. We're going with that one. That's on brand for us. So
nice.
Yeah, and it just kind of hits on that, like starting over, you know?
Yeah, back to basics kind of thing.
Yeah.
What about the cover art? The like, I don't know. They're not like American flags.
No, I think they're Italian
like
flags. I think.
Oh, okay.
So it's a photo that Maddie P took, and Matt did the cover art for Compromised Land. He did the photos for Gluttons Before Grace. He did the stuff for Got a Guy for That. He used to play bass for us, so it's like I like keeping him in the whole shtick, you know what I mean,
in the family.
So I had found a couple photos of his, and I had sent them to the band, and I was like, some like quick mock-ups, and they were like, oh, we like, you know, this one or two were the ones we went with. And I'm trying to like do it a nice version of it to like get it real mocked up for this. And it was a different photo. It was like some like construction workers, and there's like a, you know, road under construction sign where it's like building stuff. But there's like a Target logo in the background. Yeah. That yeah. like I was like, we could maybe crop it out, and it just didn't really get cropped out right.
Didn't or work, yeah.
And then like if you tried to just cut it, it took away too much. Or if you put the font over it, it just wasn't there. And I tried every trick I could to salvage this picture. And I was just like driving myself nuts. And I was like, let me just go to Matt's website and find something else.
Nice.
And as on his site, I saw that photo of the it's like the you can just Google it and see it. The Italian flags on, they're on like the lines across the street for like a parade or something.
Yeah, like a I was gonna say.
And they're like wrapped up. And I was like, oh, that looks great. It's the same vibe, kind of what we usually go with, and it's Matt's thing, and I love it. And there's a lot of negative space for titles. And I'm like,
yeah.
Threw it together in 5 minutes. And I was like, guys, I like this better. They're like, yeah, we do too. That's fine.
Yeah, perfect.
I spent hours on the first one. I'd be like, just so mad. Like, 5 minutes. I got this. Cool. Nice. We'll go with that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm ready to dive into track listing if you are, my friend.
Let's do it.
All right. Track one is called White Knuckling Life, and it's a crazy,
yeah.
It's like the perfect opener. It's such a great opening track, and it starts with your drummer, Bill, Bill Bellows, doing a like just a rocking,
crazy.
I don't know, super cool drum riff. I have to say, shout him out at the top of this. This is like his record, I think.
Oh, he did great.
He's all over, like he's always been a good drummer, and I've clearly that's like evident on other records that he's played on for you guys, but this is his record. I don't know, he like
yeah.
really really shines for me, at least. He sticks out what his playing like really just crushes it on this record completely.
He's a good dude. He's got it together. Yeah, he definitely ran with it on a lot of stuff here, and I think on the last one he was trying to play conservatively because it was his first record like with the band, and he was a lot of them, I had done demos where, like, I just did something to have a beat there. And I think he was trying to, like, do that. And then this, it was more like, okay, he's going to let his drumming voice shine a little bit more.
Sure. I think that's clear. He feels more comfortable. Yeah. And, yeah, because he was, like I said, it's his record.
So this song was actually a leftover from Compromise Land.
Oh, really?
That we forgot about. When I was doing Compromise Land, I had a Dropbox folder of, like, 20 songs, and we took, I don't know, man, there are 11, 12 songs around that album out of there as we like were working through it. Somehow this one got overlooked. Wow. So, and I mean,
a shame at the time, but perfect for this.
I
can't imagine a better opening track.
I love the idea of it.
Good.
Well, as far as like, aside from the, like the arrangement of it. Once that, I'll get to that in a second, but I loved it as the opening track because it starts with just the drums and the guitar noise. Because every album we've had has always started with guitar. Mm-hmm. And like even like Why Wait had the do 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 do, the Brennan won't let me call this on this mic, and going, all of them start with guitar. It's like we've never had one where like, what does this sound like? When you push play, it's just like drums punching you in the face. And I'm like,
yeah,
I like it. And when I was recording it, the demo of it, you know, like 2 years ago, it had that same like kind of drum intro and the little tremolo pick guitar thing doing it when it all comes in. Yeah. And I was trying to find, I was like, I need something to make it sound like even bigger. Like, how can it get bigger? And there was, I forget what song it was. There's a Gaslight Anthem song where they have like church bells and chimes going in the background.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me just see how this sounds. I'm like, this could be really stupid. And I did it on the demo and I'm like, I love it. It's so cool. So
yeah, I was gonna ask where the chimes came from. That's
it just made
it raises everything up to like, it just makes it more like epic sounding.
Yeah,
you know, like yeah.
Which I was like, and that's the problem. Like, if we're gonna do this as the first track off, like, oh, they did another album in a year. Like, what's this gonna be like? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I want it to just be as big as possible.
Yeah,
and. I had to rewrite the lyrics from what they were originally, just because that was, I thought, the weakest part of it before. So I had to, like, I kept little parts of it, but I had to rework things. The other part that I really like about this song is the bridge is completely stolen from Miscounted the Men from Compromised Land, the second track on that.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I was writing it, I was like, hey, that bridge from that other song kind of works in this same song. I was like, what if I, at the time, I was like, what if I made it like a reoccurring theme throughout the album? Like, one time we do it acoustic, one time we do it a cappella, whatever. And on Miscount of the Men, everything goes away and it's just the one guitar and the things just feel this way now, whatever. Mm-hmm. So for this one, I was like, what if we do it? Don't go empty. Just make it big and rocking out. So there's like woes behind it, and it's still like the double time drum beat. And the lines all start out the same, but have a different rhyme. So it starts with, then things just feel this way now. I think it's when we're together. Now the problem is I get them confused when we play both songs.
Right, sure. Yeah.
They all start the same, but just every line ends differently.
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of cool. I was like, well, it makes more sense if they're on the same album. But I'm like, well, no, it's kind of cool connecting it album to album, I think.
Yeah, yeah,
that it
for
sort
sure.
of ties it together that way. But yeah, this also kind of hits on the whole theme of everything, like getting back of like being a band. And I know you've said before, like just reminding yourself, like you like this. Like this is what you do.
Yeah, this is fun.
You play in bands. You have to do this.
Right.
So that's kind of the whole vibe of this one. And I think the chimes and church bells come back on the last chorus when we go to halftime and there's all the big woes.
Yep.
And oh, this is the other one that Bill and Chris did the woes. And then when I went back to touch up some vocal stuff, I was like, I feel like it needs a little more energy. And Brett's like, yeah, you should probably go in there and add some woes too.
Yeah.
And it was just, that was the, I mean, you can clearly hear which one's me. And I remember like almost passing out trying to hold those notes of just like belting it and like falling into the wall. Like,
yeah,
I think we got it. Brett's like, yep, that's fine. That's all you needed. Yep. You're good. Yeah, that one took a lot. That was a fun one.
Yeah, it's great. I meant to say this in the prelude to the track listing, but this is your best record, I think. This is my favorite Bridge Under Fire record. I think it's the best work that you guys have done.
Well, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
I just want to put that on record. I think that's true. I love this record.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm very happy with how this one turned out at the end here.
I think you should be. Speaking of things that I love, the next song is the single from this album. And what a bold name it has for a single. Fleshlight Tag. Fleshlight Tag. When I saw you post this as a single, I thought this was the album name. And I was like, what are they doing? Are they Blink 182 all of a sudden? Despite the silly childish name, which is great.
What?
It's very mature. It's definitely the single. Like, I think it's hands down. There's a few other, like, I mean, all the songs in this record are great. There's a few other like single, more standout songs, but like this is it, I think.
Yeah,
this is hands down the one. Yeah,
this is a great one. And I like that Chris teased it at the end of White Knuckling Life, of the then the drums, that whole thing. Oh, I also forgot, if I can go back for a second here, because, you know, it's Bridge Under Fire stuff and all the titles are things. I mean, White Knuckling Life was a joke from my so-called band on one of our drives after a show back from, like, Old Forge or something. They were talking about how I don't drink or smoke weed or anything, so, like, I'm always DD at the end of the night when we do band trips. And they're like, man, I'm so lucky that, like, Mark's getting us home safe after all this stuff. Like,
yeah, I know.
He's like, I don't know how he's doing it, man. We're like drinking and stuff, and he's just fucking white knuckling life over there as it comes. Whew,
yep.
that sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I really liked that phrase, and I've used that a few times. When people
yeah,
like,
that's great.
What are you doing? I'm like, I'm just over here white-knuckling life, man, just as it comes.
Yeah.
So anyways, that was what that title was from. The Fleshlight tag title, you got to ask Chris. Chris came in and was like, I got it. And just wrote it on the board, and we're like, I mean, I don't know how you play that game, but you don't want to go second, I guess. But
yeah,
all right, that's
so. Yeah.
There you go. So this is another one that Chris came in and had like almost, I think he had the entire arrangement like down, and he was like, I got this song, and he was like, so I know that you're always saying that I write parts it's hard to sing over. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, so I wrote a part that you can sing over. And he's, I'm like, okay. So he has that, the crazy slide guitar part for the chorus. And he's like, you're just playing E and then A,
yeah,
and then back to E and back to A. I'm like, I can do more than that. Like, you don't have to make it that watered down, but I appreciate it, but we could make it a little more.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so we got that one. It was all together. You know, I just had to write like that little high delay guitar part, the do 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 like that, and like, and then write lyrics for it. And I know I needed him to sing the chorus with me to make it, when we play live, to make it like beefier. And this one, it really takes advantage of like the pop punk that Chris has, like the higher, a little bit nasalier voice than me.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that the chorus really does well, like, because of that, you know what I mean?
I think so. And I think your voice sounds different on this. I feel like you're singing differently on this song than I've ever heard you sing before in some ways. Like, it's
definitely
it's melodic, but it's also like more powerfully melodic in a way. Like, it's not a melody that you're like straining to hit or like uncomfortable with. It's just like right in your range, and you're like fucking pushing it.
It's a fun higher register that you're still able to sing in. The problem is the vocals never stop. It, like, as soon as they come in, there's no like solo or lead part, or it's just like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. So by the end of this, I'm like, whew, I'm tired. Like, this is a lot.
Yeah. So that's why it helps to have someone doubling you on the chorus,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
You can take an extra breath.
There's definitely those where I'm like, all right, Chris, you done? I'm like, I'll like drop it into like a lower register and just to kind of save my voice for a minute until the next like verse comes up.
Sure.
Chris also added all those little like harmony parts that are in the bridge where it's the to the drawing board. It is some thing that he goes off on there, and I'm like, ooh. And I was like, I didn't know how to convey that, but that's definitely what I wanted there. That's awesome.
Oh, perfect.
Like, that's great.
Perfect.
So yeah, that was definitely a super fun one to put together. And as soon as we were done with all of them and we got like the initial mixes back, I thought Bridge Under You Get It was going to be like the single that we'll get to later. But Bill texted the group. He's like, dude, Fleshlight Tag is, that's the one. That's got to be the one.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, yeah, I think we're right. I think that's where we got to go. I'm like, when I got the cover art, the first version of it from, I got the one that we used from Matty P. He was also like, I got this other image that I think could be really, you could use it for something. And I was like, oh, I'll use that for the flyer for the release show. It's like all these cars with balloons up off them. Yeah. It's a cool, colorful photo. Like, oh, I'll also use that for the single to announce for Fleshlight Tag. And when Matt called me and he's like, so I worked really hard on that photo. And to my surprise, it popped up on Instagram today with the words Fleshlight Tag pasted across the top. He's like, fuck you.
That's funny.
So I was like, it'd be fun. It's funny. It's good.
It is funny. And it's a great song. Number three is the first of two alliterative H songs on this record.
I didn't
did you realize that?
I did.
Yeah. Humble Hamster is number three. This one, it's like less poppy.
A little darker.
It's a little darker, but it's also like, I don't know, it's very firmly Bridge Under Fire.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. This when we were trying to figure out like, all right, well, I guess we're gonna write another album, like what songs do we have? So we went to like our island of misfit riffs and we start pulling stuff out to be like, is this any good? And there was one on my phone that was, it's basically the opening riff of this song with a little guitar lead, and I was like, I like this, I have no idea how to play it. I don't even remember us doing it, but I like it. And the joke is that there's the Mark chords where I use these like crunchy, not just like power chords, but like weird like seventh and minor chords and stuff. And Chris is like, oh, I wrote that riff, but I was trying to play the dumb chords that you would play.
Yeah.
He's like, that's why you don't remember how to play it, because I did it. You just thought that was your part. He's like, you did the other right. part. And then I'm like, oh, I figured that out. And we wrote the riffs and got the skeleton of it together. And I remember going upstairs after practice, and Crystal was there. And I was like, oh, we got this cool song. And it's like this. She goes, it sounds like Modest Mouse. And I was like, what? And I was like, well... No, I don't really like. I don't really listen to Modest Mouse. I know a couple tunes, but like I don't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have stolen from them. And she's like, "Oh no!" And she brought up the song. She's like, "No, I know you've never heard this. It's like an obscure song." But she's like, "Elements of it are very similar, you know." Mm-hmm. So I told the guys, I was like, "I think we might have ripped off Modest Mouse for that new tune." And they go, "The tune's called Humble Hamster."
Yeah, that's really funny. Perfect.
And yeah, that was the whole thing about that. It was all just about, I remember writing it kind of when, at the end of the 2020 school year, school's all shut down, we're all remote. Starting in the fall for the, of 2020, yeah, going into 2021, nobody kind of knew what to expect for schools and for teachers, yeah. And like, how are we going to do this? And like, just felt completely directionless, and you're like, I don't know, I'm just going to have to... We're just going to go. We're just going to do it. We're going to figure it out. And I have no idea what to expect as this is happening here, you know? And that's really the vibe of this song, of like just feeling kind of lost and like just pushing through no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing I really like on this song, as I'm going through my notes here, is the guitar solo that's in there. There's two of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I used a Boss... PS5 pitch shifter pedal.
Okay.
So
I wrote specifically FX on lead.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about like how did you get the sound of the lead? Yeah.
So the pedal is basically like a whammy. Like it'll transpose whatever you play. Mm-hmm. And there's like a weird little bit of like glitchiness to it because it's not like a perfect tracking. So I set it to go. Usually when you would play, if you're doing like Tom Morello shit, you play the part mm-hmm. when you hit the pedal. The notes go up an octave whenever the pedal's turned on, right?
Sure.
So I wrote the solo in that high register that you hear it. But to record it, I played it an octave down with that pedal. So the whole thing was played an octave down but transposed to where it sounds on the recording.
Sure. Yeah.
And whenever I would do the thing of like, you know, you play like a blues solo, you go down to sort of slide up the neck to find your note. I would take the... turn the pedal off so it drops an octave for that slide. When the note comes in, it jumps right back up.
Nice.
So there's weird little little parts that are like peppered in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because it has that glitchiness, it's like it's real trebly. We had to like EQ the shit out of it because it was like ice picks when it was first recorded. It was like piercing. But it was such a cool effect that like you couldn't get without using the technology of like playing it an octave down, but it's transposed an octave up.
Yeah.
And we had to do a couple different swings. It was all kind of like improvised, which had to like do some swings, and Brett had to like do some edits to make it sound like one solid thing.
Right.
But it was a super fun toy. I felt real like Jack White playing with that thing. And
yeah, for sure. Effects. Yeah. And it adds a new element for sure.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Tim gets a great bass sound on this record overall, but I feel like you can really, at least in my headphones, when I was listening to this yesterday, I really felt it on this song. Like I first noticed it when I was like, damn, this bass sounds really awesome. And like, I'm sure maybe it's partly Brett
being a bass
who
player,
was a bass player and really dialing in a cool bass sound. But
well, that's one of the things we were talking about too, as we were going in to record this one. The bass on the last record was great. And the bass on this record is great. And it's like, well, yeah, cause that's what Brett's tuned into that player. And the drums I thought were also really, really good. Bill's kit is so like tiny, but it's so punchy that it sounds massive on the record. And when we started this, he was like, I'm just gonna bring up all the presets from the Compromise Land because we already have all that pretty much there. We had changed out some guitars and amps and stuff, but it's pretty much the same. And then he was like, I want to be more of a guitar record. He's like, how do I, he's like, how do you do that? Because we were just pitching ideas back and forth, mm-hmm. stealing recording ideas. And I was like, oh, I usually do this to make the guitars just sound like huge. And he's like, oh, let's try and do that. So like, I think the bass and the drums are very good on both albums that he did. I think the guitars are a little bit more in your face on this, which was definitely intentional as we were like going through with that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely, it feels, I mean, I haven't listened to Compromise Land and this like back to back, but this feels like an overall like more aggressive record and like the way it's mixed or the way it sounds.
Yeah. And it's also one of the things too, where like, you know, he knows us now. We didn't have the whole like get to know you phase or like, what are you really into? It was still a lot of like, you know, we would take little things of like, hey, I'm really into like this band. Here's like a quick snippet of it. That's what we're going for. And he was like, gotcha. I now know where we're going there, you know?
Yeah.
So we did some cool stuff.
Nice. Moving on to track 4, Bridge Under, you get it.
Yeah.
My only note for this song is that it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, this song was also written, if you go back to season 1, when we did the 2019 singles, we wrote all, and recorded all those in 2018, and they came out in 2019. So we were writing stuff in 2019, but we couldn't release any of it.
Right.
This is one of the ones that was written at that time. And I was like, I fucking love this song. This song was like my favorite thing we had at the time.
Yeah, it's great.
But it was so, it didn't fit with the concept of the Compromise Land. So I was like, I want to release it, but I also like, it's too good for that record. Originally, we were going to think about putting it out as like a split 7-inch with another band or something. So I was like, the song is so good that it can stand on its own for something, but I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, we'll do another record. Let's finally put that out. Let's throw that on there too. And I thought this was going to be the single. Yeah. And then they're like, let's do Fleshlight Tag. I'm like, all right, we'll do that one first. The title, if you got to follow my like ADHD brain jumping through this whole thing.
Okay, sure.
So if you, there's another one that was like all Chris came in and he's like, I got this whole thing all written out. Here's the arrangement, blah, blah, blah. Figure out a way to sing over it. And so I'm like, okay. So the verses have that do, 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 do. And then there's a pause. And I'm like, okay, how do I do that? The thing it reminded me of, there was a Real Big Fish song called The Fire, and it had that similar, there was a guitar part, and then would pause, then it would do it again, there's a pause, I'm like, oh, how did they kind of do that? So I kind of listened to how they would do their phrasing.
Yeah, I can hear it now, it's similar phrasing.
You know what I'm talking about? And so I was like, all right, there's that, and that song was called The Fire, and in this, kind of like a little like joke to myself through it, the word fire does come up a lot in the song because it's kind of all about, I mean, politics, but also just kind of in life. Like if you have a chance to make a positive change, don't miss your shot. Like if you have a chance if you have a chance to like do the right thing, don't be like, well, I don't know if we should right now. Just do it. Go.
Right.
Because the other person will take their shot. Do it. Mm-hmm. Be the change. Do it. And that's the whole message of the song, of just taking that part. Like the chorus of, you know, what are we going to do now that we have a say? Are we going to use it or let it slip away? Like that whole vibe going through, you know?
Yeah.
I also didn't realize I did this till after I'd recorded and we'd been playing it for a while. The rhythm and the melody of the two verses is completely different. Like the first one is like on the guitar part. And the second verse, all the words are during the breaks after the guitar part.
That's cool. It's like switches it up.
I was like, oh, that wasn't what you're supposed to do, but I like it. I'm keeping it.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot where like I write a first verse and the second verse just hits me differently or comes to me differently in a way where I'm just like, yep, this is just going to be different. Sometimes it's a different melody. Almost,
yeah, I think
it's okay, well, this is just what it is.
I think that was like, because I wrote it, the words, and I was recording the demo of just me at the time, and it was like, you know, you do it one or two swings, and then you're kind of like listening back and figuring out what, you know, what you got to do better or whatever as you're working it out. And I'm like, oh, that's totally different the second time around. Like,
yeah,
we're rolling with it. We're going to do that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. This is another one where Bill, I think, really crushes it, because there's like a few different like feels almost in the one song, like from the verse to like the really like the double time pre-chorus you don't really expect, and then still like a super bashy chorus. I don't know, he's kind of like jumping through a lot of hoops.
Oh yeah,
crushing it, absolutely, yeah.
And there's one big drum fill at the end where he goes like to double bass town, like crazy. And that's one of the things that like Bill loves double bass, and I kind of hate double bass. I feel like
he throws it in a few songs.
Oh yeah, he got away with it. He got away with it more on this record than others.
That's great though.
And
that's awesome.
It, yeah, like he does that, and Chris loves like the chugga chuggas on guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
So the two of them get together, it's like that just goes like, what if we do and like chug it and do it. I'm like, all right, guys, you're getting a little away from like what the song is. Like, just I know it's fun, and that was that Phil, he like did it and it was crazy. And I'm like in the room with Brett, and Bill was like, I just saw your head peek around through the glass, just look at me, and I'm like, we're keeping it, right? That was saying. I was like, you can have that one. That one's staying.
Yeah. Who, me? Did
It's like I had to do it at least on one, and I mean the rest of the take was perfect too, so we're keeping it.
No, it's perfect.
No, it's good. Yeah. It's I think it's done overall on the record with enough moderation that it isn't like distracting. So I feel like sometimes that can become distracting, like the crazy double bass, you know? Unless if you're not a metal band and you're doing it, like it can start to take away. But I feel like
I agree. I think he does it an appropriate amount on this record.
Yeah.
And he does it where it works.
Yeah. So but every time that Phil comes up when I hear the song, I'm like, it's fucking nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's a fun one.
Next up, number five, the second alliterative H song, Hot and Heavy. This one, again, speaking of great bass sound, this one starts with a cool bass and some like ambient noise.
Yeah. So this one I wrote, and it's kind of a weird one where I was like, don't do verse, chorus. Like the structure is all over the place. I wrote that intro part, the do, 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 and like kind of got that going. And Tim was playing it there, and I'm like, you need something. I want to have like some wind or like some sort of effect to just like set a mood before the bass comes in. And last time we recorded, Brett had a bunch of like fidget spinners kicking around the studio that everybody was playing with. Now he has this little handheld synthesizer that does like weird noises. So,
oh, you mean this handheld synthesizer?
I have the same one sitting in the other room. I bought it while we were hanging out there because we had so much fun with it.
I asked my wife to get it for me for Father's Day because I loved it so much.
It's really fun.
Yeah,
so,
it's the best. It's so fun.
Anytime like Brett and I were talking about something that was like related to the album, doing whatever, there'd be a moment of silence and Tim's in the back going, and Tim's like playing with the little thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, this thing's fucking awesome. We got to use it for something. And we're like, I don't know. Well, as we're playing with it, I was like, we need to find something I was doing the keyboard part for the bells for White Knuckle and Life. And then I was like, Hot and Heavy needs something for that intro. And they're like, what about the synth? And we're like, it's been in front of us the whole time.
Yeah.
And so like Tim and Chris were both like, I think Chris found the wind sound that we end up using. Tim's like,
nice.
What the shit? I've been playing with this thing for 2 days. He just does it in 10 minutes and finds it. And they were both like tinkering with it. And so we just had that sound. I'm like, yeah, that sets the weird dark mood going for the do, 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 that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that little effect going in there.
It's great.
And it's the whole song was about it's very like repetitive days and just not kind of like feeling challenged of like as we've talked about, very goal oriented where it's like I have to be working towards something of being like hey, write some songs. It's like, why? Well, it's like, well, cuz you're going to record and put out an album.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, now I'm invested and now I'll find motivation to do it. But like if it's not part of a bigger project, it's just not exciting to me, you know?
Yep.
And so this was definitely, you know, going through the whole COVID days of where you're like, well, we're not playing shows. We just finished a record. What are we even doing? Like, what is right. the next thing? Like, I think you and I had just finished maybe the second season of this podcast at the time. And I'm like, I don't even know what other stuff I could get involved with. Like,
yeah,
I was building pedals. I had built a bunch of clones. I could do it, but I hadn't started summer school yet. I hadn't started like my own thing. So so it was kind of, you were doing all these things, but they weren't part of a bigger project yet. And that was kind of the whole vibe of the song. And the title's from a Seinfeld episode with
my guess.
The saxophone player. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I wrote this next song's called Hot and Heavy. So I was like, wow, this is the song. This is that song that you never really got to hear him play. But he was actually playing this song.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Perfect.
So it's sort of a cover song, I guess. I don't know.
I guess so.
from the early 90s. Cool.
It was well placed in the record, I feel like, because it kind of like slows it down a little bit. It's still like super intense, but it still like rocks, but it's like a little bit of a, like, it take a breather.
Yeah.
As far as like the,
it was the pacing of like the pop punk kind of side of it, which is like, that's what Chris is into. Like, he was writing a lot of these kind of like pop punky ones, and then like mine were kind of like, it's a little bit of like the darker, like, yeah, things are kind of fucked right now. This is kind of what I'm feeling right now. So.
But speaking of pop punk, moving into track 6, a song called The One About the Pope and Raquel Welch.
It's another Seinfeld reference.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I knew you were a big Seinfeld guy, so anytime that I feel like it could be a Seinfeld reference, it is a Seinfeld reference. Yeah.
I kept referring to a joke of, do you hear the one about the Pope and Raquel Welch? Well, this is the one. This is the one about the Pope and Raquel Welch. I mean, this also undermines what I just said. This is kind of a pop punk one, but I brought this one to the table.
Oh, nice. And this is great.
It's
a soup that pop punk riffs just sounds like Blink 182 or something.
Oh yeah, it's dancing around a D chord. Yeah, it's so simple. It's also a son of a bitch to play. So like, Chris,
I bet
I got the guitar part that you're gonna play for the song. I can't play it. I have to sing. How would I do both? So that's the one, like, before we play it, he has to like stretch and he's like,
here we go.
And it's like, yeah, that just goes for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was written about my buddy Nick moved out. He lived with us for 4 years. And you know, as you live with someone and you grow, and sometimes you butt heads a little bit and you do all that. It's kind of just dealing with all that and like the communication part of that. And it's never fun when you're like, oh, I guess you're leaving. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. So, so that was a whole thing about that. And vocally, I wanted to be, especially the chorus, real like Less Than Jake type vocals where like,
sure. Yeah.
Chris has the gruff voice and Roger has like the higher voice.
Yeah. Or again, like Blink-182 or like Mark and Tom. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was kind of the vibe I was going for with that of the two parts. And
it works great. It's very effective. Yeah.
And as we were playing with it, I was like, that bridge part where everything, well, there's two bridge parts. The first one where it starts like the da na na chicka 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 da na na, this back, and then like Tim goes to town with like a crazy solo and you're like, oh, it's a neat bass solo. And then Chris like melts your face shredding after that. Right. I'm like,
yeah,
that's amazing. That's great. That went on. That was super cool. And then after that, it like cuts and there's just like, we play it live. We do it on bass. But on the recording, I did the whole song with a baritone guitar to get that. Kind of, even though most of it's not in the register, most of it's like high enough to be a regular guitar. But that bridge part is like the, and that's just like,
I was wondering if that was a baritone when I was listening to it because it sounded just different enough.
Yeah, it's the low part, and we played a gig like a week or two ago, whatever it was. We were playing the song, and he gets to that part, and I look at Tim like, oh shit, am I playing it or are you? Who's doing that part? And he's like, I got this. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I got this. So he just did it on bass. So I'm like,
yeah,
I don't have the register to go down that low,
right?
But it was super fun to throw it in just for that like different sound. And Chris comes with the boo doo 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 right when the chorus comes back in.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I love it. It's a fun, super pop punky kind of song, but it's still got that like gruff rawness to it.
Oh,
you
for
know?
Sure. Yeah. Agreed. Number seven, Don't Judge Me. This is Art.
It's a reference to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia at the when they try, okay. then try to win an award at the bar. Frank and Artemis try to make a classy burlesque style bar and it doesn't go well.
Oh, sure.
Don't judge me. This is art. This is a Chris one. And he was like, I wrote this one and it's in a different key than we normally play and sing in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pain in the ass to sing.
Okay, yeah, I have a note about how this is another super melodic song
yeah.
for you to sing, and also it's a pretty complex melody
yeah.
to sing as well. Like you're like in between like,
well, because there's that
tones and stuff. Like it's real. It's not like a. I mean, it's a poppy. It is poppy,
it's
but
art.
It's also just like interesting. Kind of, it's a more complex melody than I've ever heard you sing.
Yeah.
I think. And you do a great job of it, but it stuck out to me immediately when I heard it. I was like, whoa, this is different.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. This was one of the, there were two that I was really nervous about. There was like, we're recording those two last, like vocally, just because I'm like, I don't know. Let me get all the easy stuff out of the way first. And
yeah.
like, this was one of the ones that was at the end. Just because like, it doesn't, the guitar part, there's like, I forget what note it is, but there's like a note that's like, it's not wrong. It's just not what you would expect it to be to like resolve. It's like do do
yeah.
do 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 that like note that's a
yes,
weird.
Yeah, it's
off.
The one. Yeah, yeah.
And it just threw me for a loop. And I'm like, how am I gonna do this? And like the chord changes are like a hair off the beat as it goes. Like
mm-hmm.
it's a really weird one. This is definitely one I'm like, Chris, how do I sing over this? And he's like, that sounds like a you problem there, buddy. You can
yeah,
you can handle that one. And, yeah, I was trying to work my way through it. And so the big thing I was trying to convey, to Brett was like, it has to build all the way to like the bridge guitar solo. Like everything, the first verse has to be really empty. The pre-chorus has to have a little bit more. And then the chorus has to have the most, but like it has to build as it goes through. So it was a lot of like layering. And there was like one part, I remember getting the first mix and being like, the chorus sounds so empty, and I couldn't figure out why. I'm like, oh, because there's, I was singing what would be like the high harmony. Like it was the only voice on there because I was like,
yeah,
that's what I heard in my head. I'm like, oh, you need to write a low part to support it. And then I was like, oh, but when we practice, I've only ever done it. I never demoed it myself. I only did it practice with just me. So I'm like, oh, I have to write another part and go back and like throw that whole other low thing in. And that's when Brett was like, that's what he's like, yep, that's what we were missing. Like I knew there was something making it empty. It just needed one other like low voice to support the higher voice, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing when it's like, no, I normally write here and demo everything, but this one we never demoed. It was like, yeah, we'll go figure it out.
Yeah.
And no, it's a weird one, and like I think there's like a key change in that bridge where like the solo is. It's a weird thing where like
yeah.
goes to a different chord at the end of each phrase. Yeah, it was a tough one to like just memorize how to play, let alone sing over.
Is this a political one?
This one was not so much political. It was just like, I mean, there's elements of it. Just the like, I know it's not the end of the world and whatever. But it's kind of just a message to myself of being like, calm down. You're going to be okay. It's very
okay.
like a very serenity now. Going with our Seinfeld references
okay.
of just like
yeah.
the advice that you wish you would hear sometimes.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm just working it out in my little therapy session in my notebook, just being like, you know, I know you're like trying to do everything, like calm down a little bit.
All right.
Just kind of work through that. Which is a weird kind of, I guess just real dealing with like perspective of everything. Like,
sure.
You're going to be okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
So don't judge me. This is art.
I won't. It's great. Next up is Observing Cubic Zirconias. This featuring the elusive acoustic guitar.
It's there.
Under Fire Records. It's there. I hear it too often.
So when I wrote this, I wrote it on acoustic guitar, and I was like, hey, every once in a while we need a few more songs that can be played acoustic for when I have to do those kind of gigs.
Sure.
And I was like trying to convey to the band like the vibe I wanted to go for. And there was a song by Hot Water Music called Seeing Diamonds. And they were like, oh, so we'll call it Observing Cubic Zirconias.
Oh, perfect.
So that's the vibe that it was trying to take. The mix was trying to take from a Lawrence Arms song. I think it was The Demon was the song where, like, there is acoustic guitar, but it's not the lead instrument. Like, it's all bass and drums. And it's more just, like, the rhythm of the acoustic guitar, the ch-ch-ch-ch playing underneath it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because the first mix Brett sent, it was like, oh, this is the acoustic song. I'm like, no, it's the rock song, but it just has that different...
It has an acoustic guitar in it.
Yeah, but that's not the feature, you know?
Right.
And I played him the reference, and he was like, got it, let's rework all of this. And like,
yep,
that's what that needs. It was written about my work roommate. I've gone through like 9 work roommates in 7 years. I'm starting to think it's me that they all
I think
just
it's you
leaving.
Too. I already do.
It's probably that. But as I've bounced around these different work roommates, my roommate during the school year was my friend Jessica, who was awesome. She was like one of the coolest. We like knew each other as coworkers, but we never had to like share a workspace. And you're like, that could always be, you know, a weird thing.
Yeah, for sure.
She was awesome. And it was just like, total like the coolest thing to like share a space with, you know. And she set me up adopting my dog Gus. Like that was like her whole thing. And so like she ended up during the end of the school year, she's like, I'm moving to Florida. And I was like, oh. And she's like, I used to live there, I came up here, my family's here, but I'm like, it's kind of burned out on Syracuse. And she's like, I've dated everyone there is to date, I'm gonna go back down there.
Okay.
Like, she's like, I'm not finding anybody. I'm going back there. Right. I'm getting a job back there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's, you know, it's cool for you that, like, you're doing what you got to do to take care of yourself and your life. And, like, that's awesome. But I'm also like, well, fuck me. What am I getting?
But what about me?
Yeah. Who's going to hang out with me now? I was like, what? You're the person who watches my dogs when I got to go do something for the day.
Oh, man.
Who's Gus going to play with now?
Oh, poor Gus.
I know. So that this whole song was written about that. Just like, you know, it sucks that you're going and like, I don't want you to, but I get it. But it's still like, wish you didn't. That'd have been cool. That was the whole vibe of this one. And then the solo section where Chris takes that little guitar part was supposed to be something else. Like, a week before we recorded it, we were like, what if before the second verse, we had the riff 2 more times, we'll put like a solo there, and we'll like, I don't know, we'll call somebody to do like an accordion solo or a keyboard solo or like something weird. And we're like, okay, yeah, maybe we could throw something there. I don't know. And so we did it. And then as we were going through, Chris was like, I came up with like something like a space filler that could just be like, somebody knows, like play a solo, something like this or whatever. And he, that little guitar thing he does. And as we're getting to the end, we're like, weren't we going to put something there? We're like, I mean, we're pretty much done. The guitar's fine.
I think we have something there.
I think it'll be a guitar. What are we going to call somebody? That's who's got the time?
Exactly.
Then they got to learn it. Oh my God. Everything's recorded a half step down. It's going to be in a weird key.
Yeah. That's too much explaining.
I don't need all that in my life.
Nice.
So that was, supposed to be a different solo, but it's another guitar solo.
Yeah, it works. This is a great song. I like it a lot. It's another, like, it's a little bit of a curveball. Kind of don't expect it.
Yeah, it's one that is very singy, but it's, even though it's, like, still shouty, but it has a lot of melody to it. The other thing I really like, this is a super music theory dork thing, the bridge comes up again at the end, the it's in A minor every time earlier, but the last time it's in C major. So it just goes to the relative major to be like, oh, yeah, but it's going to end happy, mm-hmm, as opposed to being sad every other time you hear it.
Right.
So I was like, that's pushes up glasses. That is songwriting.
Nice. It is, my friend. What else is songwriting is track 9, To Grill a Mockingbird.
You know what that's a reference to?
Yeah. These are my notes. Ready? I'm going to read you my notes verbatim. Hell yes. Chorus is so awesome. Weird. Rocks.
I'll take all of those things because this was the other one that I was super uncomfortable with. Like,
oh, really? This is one of my favorite tracks on the record, I think. It's great.
This is another Chris one that he came in where he had everything structured out. Every time there's like, well, we do it like a half time here, but we like add an extra time and a half on this, and it goes in this weird order, but it comes back in a different order, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, when we have the whiteboard where we write like the song structure on there.
Yeah.
When we had to finally erase this one, it's like, oh God. Yeah. I hope we all got it memorized.
My note of weird, I know, is about like the structure of the song.
It's all over the place. It's so weird. And this is another one I had to rewrite the lyrics for it like 5 times because I was just like, I can't find something I like, and that'll fit over it. And like, I think I ended up giving Brett like a song by like Clutch, and I was like, go something kind of like this for this one. It's doesn't totally nail the Clutch thing, but I was like, it was enough of a like a conversation starter that we were like, we have a shared lingo of like where we're going with it. And where it's like, oh no, the chorus has that like staticky lo-fi vocal on it mixed with like the first verse is like very dry, like there's not a lot going on effects on the vocals, you know. It was just kind of about you know, we're all getting older and growing up, and some of us are growing up in different ways than others, and one of my friends is still being very childish and like Jim Halpert-y of like pranks and like all that kind of stuff that I'm like, okay man, like that's your way of doing this, like, let's wrap this shit up, come on. And this is just kind of like a frustration of that, of like, just like write it all out in like 5 minutes and you're like, oh, maybe that'll be the song. Maybe
I have a thing,
maybe that'll work, and I feel better now, so all right, I'm over it. it's heavy and it's fucking aggressive.
Yeah.
And I hope we never have to play it live.
Yeah.
That's become the new like running joke when we're making a set of like, oh, you want to throw To Grill a Mockingbird? No, I don't. I would prefer not to, because it's a lot to remember. There's a lot going on in that song.
Nice. Getting to the end of the album proper before the 2 bonus tracks we're going to talk about, the closing song, track 10, is The Sandwich Artist, formerly known as Prince.
I like that one too. That's pretty good.
I like that one too. Clearly a reference to Prince. Where does the sandwich artist idea come in?
I mean, when Prince was the artist known as Prince, formerly known as Prince. Yeah, sorry. And then, you know, Subway refers to their sandwich artist.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So, you know, Prince went on to later work at Subway, where he was the sandwich artist, formerly known as Prince.
Maybe he faked his death and is just working at a Subway.
It's
right
just
now
a simpler life. And he's like, that's fine. What's that? Double turkey? I'll do it. That's fine. Yeah. It's cool, man. This one, Chris wrote and came in with like all the stuff. And it's a real weird one. And I love it. And I wanted to get real spacey with it. So.
Yeah,
I recorded it on the my 12-string Rickenbacker that I was like, never thought I would use.
Is that like the super like chimey guitar thing happening? I wrote that down. Yeah, it goes the whole song.
Yeah,
it's, and I love that it still goes under like the more like heavy chorus. Like they're still there. It's great.
That with the little like I talked about it on one of the February albums. There's like, this little like half capo that only capos like 3 of the 6 strings.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Or in this case, 6 of the 12 strings.
Yeah.
So I did that. So I can really like play the whole song with just one finger. And it's just like, and those high strings are just jangling throughout the whole thing.
Nice.
And then Chris, it leaves a lot of space for Chris to do the do, 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 do. And he's just doing his thing running through. It was really written coming out of the winter of like 2020, 2021, like, and when it was like, hey, we had that big COVID surge during Christmas and all that, and it's like people were starting to get vaccines, and it was like, have this little bit of feeling hopeful, like, don't fuck this up. That's the message of this whole song. It's like, don't fuck this up. Like,
well, you should have put this out earlier because a lot of people fucked it up.
They did fuck it up. They weren't listening to me. I mean, I tried to get this album out in less than 2 years. I worked as fast as I could. It just wasn't in time.
Just not enough. You should have worked harder. You should have worked harder, Mark.
I know. God damn it. But I wasn't able to do that whole reverse delay thing at the end. Because I didn't have that pedal until right before recording.
Oh,
yeah. Where it does the whole like outro where they're all like fading. All
it gets trippy delays. At the end. Yeah, that's great.
And I was like, that's really cool. And as we were doing like other songs, I think Bill was like, what if we throw that reverse delay part there? I'm like, no, we're using it at the end. Like if you do it again, it'll cheapen it. It's cool that one time at the end of like, what did I just listen to? Like,
right.
The album started with pounding drums and it ends with these like trippy, like psychedelic guitar echoes.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful closer too. It works great as a closer to the record, I think.
I liked it. Yeah. Cause I was like, it's another super oddball song. Like I love it and it's good, I think, but it's not, there's so much like pop rock, punk rock in this album that I'm like, where does this go? Like you can't, where do you sequence it? And I was like, it has a big ending. It could be cool as the last track.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it works because it's like, it's a powerful closer, but it's not a super poppy or super catchy song.
Yeah.
Necessarily, but it's still, I feel like it's the best place for it is at the end for a number of reasons.
To wrap this shit up, you know? Get it right there.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't wrap this shit up if you're listening on Bandcamp.
On Bandcamp, guys, if you get this on Bandcamp, you get two bonus tracks. So let's talk about the bonus tracks were recorded very shortly before the release of the record. Am I right about that?
About 48 hours before the album came out.
Okay, so when were they written?
Probably about a week or two prior to that.
Okay, so a little bit more time to write them.
Yeah.
You didn't write and record them in 48 hours or whatever.
Oh, no, So as we were getting to the stages where you have to start uploading everything to the streaming sites and so they can all get processed and put out, we didn't do any physical media for this release just because vinyl plants are so backed up. And I'm like, I don't even know where we're going to be, what shows we're going to be playing coming out. Is it even financially worth it? I don't know. So we didn't do any of that. And then we're like, well, it's weird because they're on streaming and like, do we even just do like cheap CDs? And we're like, nobody even buys music anymore.
No one takes free CDs anymore.
Yeah.
As we know from our last album release party.
Right. And so it's like, what's the, music is no longer the product. It's just like, that's the vehicle to sell t-shirts, basically.
Yeah.
From a business side. So I was trying to be like, well, what could we do to incentivize people to maybe buy it through like Bandcamp or something? I was like, well, we could add two more songs that would be like bonus songs that are only on the Bandcamp. So if that's your incentive, like you go there, there's this, and if you're seeking out Bandcamp to listen to it, you're probably more inclined to buy it because that's where we sell stuff. So I was like, all right, we should do that. So guys, do we have two more songs? We're like, no, we don't.
Nope.
So Chris and I were like, well, let's go back to the Island of Misfit Riffs and let's see what we have. And we had like five rough songs. Like they weren't, some were just like a riff. Some were like he had everything structured out or somewhere. I was like, I got this thing as like a quick little demo I threw together. It's pretty simple, whatever. So we decided these two songs were probably the easiest to get on their feet, like the quickest. You know what I mean? Of like, the guys can pick them up. So the first one, that's not a good title, I wrote. And then the second one, Chris, it's, I didn't have it all written here, was it, I was going to write a joke about Jonestown, but the punchline was too long.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's another dark one, but it's funny. So we got those together. We practiced. Also, Tim, because kids, Little League stuff, hasn't been able to do a lot of our practices lately. So we were just sending it to him and be like, learn the song. I think you can do it. I think it'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
And so this album came out Friday. So on Tuesday, we recorded all of our parts. And I think Wednesday we played a gig. And then Thursday, Tim came by on lunch and put a punch in his bass. And wow. I did final vocal edits. I mixed and mastered that night. So it came out on Friday. So this was super last minute.
Well, they're pretty great for being super last minute.
Thank
I gotta
you.
Say, you record, but you recorded them. These weren't recorded with Brett. These were recorded home studio.
Yeah, I did them here. Yeah. So it's trying to like throw everything together super quick, which was fun because like one of the things I like about going somewhere else is that like you're kind of limited by like whatever tools Brett has are different than the tools that I have. So like some of I would bring some gear, but if I didn't bring it, we're not using it today.
Yeah.
Whereas like here, I could be like for. Like Chris uses a certain pedal for like all of his like distortion stuff. And I was like, use a Tube Screamer on that one. And he's like, I don't have a Tube Screamer. I'm like, I got one. Here you go. Like, so we just changed it up to, we could get different tones and I'm like, I know how to do this. Cause I'm familiar with all this stuff here, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so we did that one. The first one was,
that's not a good title.
Yeah. That was us trying to name it last minute. Whatever, I don't remember what we had, Rick. That's not a good title. Like, that is.
But that is.
Yeah. That.
What's that one about?
Just about me trying to keep up with all of my commitments that I overcommit to of like, I want to do everything. I want to fill 25 hours a day. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm committing to stuff that's like 2 months out. Like, that might not happen. And then I get there and I'm like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
Why would I agree to these things?
Yep.
But I keep doing it.
Yeah. That was my guess. I wrote down the phrase overextended and I overcommit.
Yep. I was like, this is very like, on the nose.
Yeah.
But
this is about him.
Yeah. This is right there. I really love the song. It gets stuck in my head every time we play it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because it's, you know, one of the newest things we've done and I've only heard it a couple times. But I'm really proud of the chorus in this one. And I really, really dig this song.
Yeah, it's a great one.
Oh, and then the little guitar solo that Chris throws in there. We talked about doing a bridge, and I had vocals for half the bridge, and I was like, we could fill the other half with, like, I don't know, a solo or something, but I don't remember how we landed on it. And I was like, I think I have to make a solo for that. So when Chris came over to record, he was like, is there going to be, like, a solo there? I'm like, yeah, I didn't write one, though. And he's like, oh, I have this. I'm like, that's it.
Well, there it is, my friend.
You have a solo there now because that's one less thing I have to do.
Yep. It's great how that works out sometimes.
Yeah, totally. I was like, that's great. Overextended and I overcommit.
All right, and the second bonus track and the last song for this release is I was going to write a joke about Jonestown, but the punchline was too long.
It's a dark one. Chris wrote this one, and it is heavy as fuck.
Yeah, my note is kicks ass.
Yeah, it's as like it's wild. It's just fast and aggressive, and I wrote the lyrics. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to sing over this one because it's so just like fast and the like all those things. And the chorus is kind of that like only in dreams, like the dun, 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 and the where it just keeps jumping down, even though ours is like more aggressive than that. But you can see where I'm stealing.
I know what you mean. Yeah, for sure.
Where
I'm stealing.
Yeah. You know, you get what I'm taking it from. I had it in my head. Crystal and I were out to breakfast at a diner and she was talking about something, but I was on my phone just typing out lyrics to this as fast. Like, I'm like, I just got an idea. I'm like, I think this will work. And for the most part it did. I took a few edits, but I went through when I was recording vocals for these two, That's Not a Good Title is more singy. So I did that one first. I'm like, cool. I'm like, Jonestown is going to like blow up my voice, but I'm going to try my best to do it. And so I did it all with like my normal good condenser mic. And I was like, it's there, but it's too pretty. So I just got like a regular dynamic mic that like we sing into for practice, and just full like hardcore singer, just like yelled into that one to like full body, like thrusting to go, you know what I mean? Like get that going.
Yeah.
And so that's on there to like double the choruses and everything. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what that needed to like just beef it up and make it have the dun, 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 you know? It's written all about how the world that us and our parents, even us, the world that we grew up in doesn't exist anymore. Like,
yeah, that was my guess.
Yeah, it's all just like stop trying to hold. I mean, from teaching and working with kids, like stop trying to hold them accountable to what you grew up in. Of like,
yeah,
any little thing of like, why are you on your phone? I'm like, you would be too. Like,
yeah,
if you grew up with it, you'd be using it all the time.
Right.
You didn't, and you're still on it all the time. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Don't expect them to have the self-control that you don't. Like,
right.
Come on.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's unrealistic to have those expectations. Like, we're going to have to adapt. And I know right now it feels like we're going in the wrong direction, but we have to push forward and try and do better.
Yeah.
That's the message of that one here.
That was my guess. That was my guess. Cool.
Again, when you have about 6 hours to record it, you don't have time to get real poetic with it. You're just like,
how am I feeling right now?
It's this. Should I do a revision? I don't have time.
Nope.
I'm just going to yell. This is what it is.
Yep.
So.
Hey, well, cool, man.
And it was...
go ahead.
I was like, well, that's it. And it was released digitally, and I've gotten some people saying they enjoy it.
Hey, I'm one of those people, dude. I said it earlier and I'll say it again. I think it's the best Bridge Under Fire record that has been made. I think it's, I think it showcases a lot of the band in ways that haven't been showcased before. I honestly, like, you joke about it being a big deal to have the same lineup on two records, but I really think it shows that the, like your ability to write together, your ability to play together, like you guys really sync together in a way that maybe you haven't been able to capture on previous records because the lineup always changed. And I feel like as good of a record as The Compromise Land is, and I do really like that record, this shows like what the bond of a band, like how the bond of a band changes and can elevate the material when you are very comfortable playing together and you can play to each other's strengths. Like, you know that Bill loves the double bass drum, stuff like that, so you're like gonna let it slide, or you're gonna let it in when you wouldn't write that, but he does. And that, like, you know, you're becoming,
it's definitely more of a band record than like
Compromise
was
like
closer to like a February album, because it was so much of it was like, I think this is a great idea. It's like, well,
because
you're the only one in the room.
Exactly. And there's been other Bridge Under Fire releases before where I know we're like, you've done everything because you're the only consistent member, you know, from the beginning to now. So it's like, you're becoming more than the sum of your parts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like that, this is the first record where I feel like that really shines through.
God damn, it's taken us long enough, you know, like 12 years or some shit, whatever.
I know.
But, thank you very much. I do appreciate all those things. And, I agree with all of it. It's the greatest thing we've ever done.
Do you really you think this is your favorite record?
I think so. There's parts of Compromise Land that I love, but I'm like partial to that because of what that is so personal to me.
Sure. Yeah.
I think if I separate like my sentimentality from it, I think this is probably the strongest record. Like, there's definitely a lot going on here that I'm like,
I mean, you can draw a line between what you think your best record is and what your favorite record is. I feel like that's a distinction that can be made.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think this one is definitely probably the best one that we have. And I think everybody gets their shot to show what they do best without making it obvious that like, oh, this is a Tim song. Everybody kind of picks their spots and like it works really well.
Yeah, I mean, this might be, I this certainly no offense to anyone that has ever been in Bridge Under Fire before
there's a lot
we
of
recorded,
them.
Before we recorded this podcast. But I feel like thinking back on like the conversation we just had, we found ways to talk about each member's contributions to the band and highlight them just in the natural conversation. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, Bill's drumming really shows through, and wow, Tim got a really good bass sound in this record, and yeah, it's like the solo in that one song is really great, and like Chris wrote all these songs and I wrote all these, like, you know, I'm singing differently. Like, that's the first, I don't remember any other Bridge on the Fire record where we've like just naturally highlighted all the contributions that really come together like that. So I think it shows.
I'm proud of it. It's a good one. You should go listen to it, everybody.
And where can they listen to it, Mark?
Every goddamn place they want. It's on all the streaming stuff. It's go to Bandcamp to get those two bonus tunes we talked about. They're pretty good. You can purchase it there and support my art and our dreams. The release show will have happened after, after we record this, but before you hear it. So if you're listening to this and you missed the release show, you missed a good one. It was fucking nuts. But yeah, go check it out. Tell your friends. I'm sure we'll be playing more shows. I hope we're playing more shows.
I hope you are too, because I can't go to the release show, and I would love to see you guys again. I would love to hear some of these songs live. So
we'll set something up. We'll make something happen.
Let's make something happen. Yeah.
You know, all these things I'm agreeing to do. Yeah, in like 3 months, I'll totally do all that.
Yeah.
Why would I not want to do that? That'd be great.
Of course not.
I never learned my lesson.
Nice. So, awesome, man.
But yes, there is all that.
Do you have anything else to plug besides this record? I mean, this is like your big thing.
I know.
We've never had a conversation about an album that has just come out, so this is the plugging.
This is the important thing to check out.
But it's also the season finale, so is there anything else that you want to plug that may happen within the next year?
Oh, God. I don't even know, man. I work on some summer school electronics stuff. I might have had a breakthrough today. I'm not sure.
Oh.
I think I've got something good coming out soon. You should go check that stuff out, summerschoolelectronics.com. Against the Giants is probably going to keep writing some stuff. Keep an eye on those guys.
Yeah, please do.
And I don't know. I'm sure I'll find some other trouble to get into with some things to work on here. You got anything coming out you got to plug? Comic book update?
Comic book is still done. I know I said that last week, but...
It didn't get undone?
It didn't get undone. My fingers are crossed. I have begun the process of sending out the digital copies, so I am almost positive that by the time this episode comes out, everyone should have received their digital copy of the book, and print stuff will come. That's off the printers. That's being worked on as we speak, so hopefully that process goes smoothly. I can't guarantee it will, but digital stuff should be in your email. Check your spam folders if you don't think you've gotten it, or shoot me an email, or respond to the Kickstarter thing, whatever.
All those things.
All those things. Check it out. The Amazing Shakes. And yeah, so be on the lookout for that. I have a story. My artist, Riley McFarlane, and I have a story in a horror anthology that is called From the Static, from a publisher called Band of Bards out of Buffalo. And that's coming to Kickstarter this August. If you want to see a short 6-page horror story that I wrote.
That's cool.
It is very cool. I'm very excited about it. So that'll be going up on Kickstarter in August. Any of the songs and stuff that you've heard me talk about this season, you can find on either theactionband.bandcamp.com if you're talking about the early Scotto stuff. Or if you want to listen to my solo stuff, my February stuff, that's Carol's Kid with Carol with a K.bandcamp.com. And the Action's got some shows in August, a couple shows in September, looking at stuff for the fall.
We'll set up something for the fall.
We got plans. We got some ideas we're kicking around, yeah. So
cool.
I think that's it. You can listen to my other podcast, The Multiverse Report, if you want to hear me talking about nerd stuff. That's a weekly Sunday night
thing. Like A-wings and snow speeders and the difference and all that stuff.
Fuck you. This podcast is over.
It's over. That's a wrap on season 3.
And forever. I don't know. I feel like we'll have to figure out what we're doing for season 4. I know you have some ideas. I think I might have an idea too, but I don't know. We'll have to talk. We got a year to talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh, be on the lookout. Next February, I have an album coming out. whatever my 8th February album's going to be. There, that's something.
There you go. That's something. Yeah, I may have one of those too. We'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for listening. Please go back and check out season 1 and 2. There's a whole lot of weird stuff of us talking about albums that you would probably enjoy.
Yeah, so. For sure. If you like this and you haven't listened to the first two, definitely listen to those.
Yeah.
Cool. But we want to say thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate those of you that do. This is fun for Mark and I to do, and even though it's very much us just kind of fanning the flames of our own egos, it is nice to hear that people actually are enjoying it. So thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. And I don't have anything else to say. We'll just see you next year, I guess, for season 4.
All right. Bye.
Bye.